everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Keith.
Hi, Keith.
I want to thank Clancy for inviting me to participate here, and it's always a privilege to be able to participate in the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Probably the most important thing that I'm sure of you this evening, it hasn't been necessary for me to take a break of being a dope since May the 11th, 1976, and for that I'm especially grateful. And I drank alcohol until I achieved pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, bought myself a Harley Davidson and a bag of dope, and became a legend in my own mind, really. I know there's some other legends here because I can see them. And I heard my story when I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous, and maybe you can relate to it. I used to drink a little beer and think maybe I ought to do something, and smoke a little weed and kind of fantasize how I was going to do it. Shoot a little speed so I had the strength to do whatever it was I was going to do. Get a little coke so I could be cool when I did it. And then I drank a little whiskey and forget what the hell it was I was going to do. Kind of a pig myself. I didn't really specialize, but the good news for that is I haven't been necessary for me to set the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and wonder if there's anything I should have tried. I'm grateful for that. I'm a fourth generation alcoholic, and that doesn't necessarily, I'd like to be a victim, but through therapy I learned that the saddest are seldom victims, so I just kind of had to accept the fact that if there's anything that environment taught me was to be a survivor, and I'm grateful for that. I was born in Texas, and that doesn't necessarily make you an alcoholic. I like to blame it on that, but what they gave me was certain character defects that once you put a little whiskey on it, I've always had the ability to recognize your character defects, and I've always had a terrible need to tell you about them. Therefore, drinking was a contact sport for me. I've had a certain real need to hang around sick women. I love sick women. The crazier they are, the better I like them. The attraction for that. I met a sick, crazy lady one Saturday night when I wasn't doing anything, hanging around a little country dance in the Texas family one Saturday night. I just got out of jail. The state of Texas had taken my driver's license away forever. Didn't have a job, didn't have anything going for her. And I asked this crazy lady to dance, and I don't think we really fell in love with each other. We kind of fell in sick with each other because the rocks in my head fit the holes in hers. Eventually, we made a commitment to something. I don't remember. I don't remember what happened there anymore, and I remember crossing over the invisible line. But she ended up having a little girl, and I looked around one day, and I got a wife and a kid and a 120-pound German Shepherd dog that hates me and a cat that's attacking me all the time, and I'm not real certain where any of this came from. I'm a thief by trade. I don't like to work, and those things resemble responsibility, and I didn't know what was going on. Eventually, I had to leave Texas. That'll happen to you if you stay there and do what I was doing. I hear people talk about those kind of trips in Alcoholics Anonymous, and they call them geographics, but in Texas, they call it an unlawful flight to avoid prosecution. I moved to California because a guy offered me a job on a ranch 40 miles west of Long Beach, and I didn't have sense enough to know that was ocean. I packed up this crazy lady and the dog and the cat and the kid and started for California. And the amazing thing about it, where I went, I took me, and I'm the first one to get there, and I got busted just as I got to California, which is why I left Texas. And ultimately, I had to find a place to rest because I did a lot of speed. That's like going 190 miles an hour if you're feeding me over the trail. I was busy all the time. I like to do things. I'm the visible 1% out there doing things. I mean, I just like the deal. I just want to be in the deal. And I just was always trying to do a deal. And you get tired eventually, and I had to come home. And I came home, and this lady was crazy and yelling and screaming. And the kid was bawling all the time. The dog was barking. The cat was scratching me. And she always set up these traps inside the door so I couldn't sneak up on her. And she put pots and pans inside the door, and I'd be coming up with all my friends, and I'd open the door and step in one of these pots, and I'd have all your cowboy boots and pointy toed boots stick in the pot, and they ain't cool when you got your the boot and the cot, and you got your gun in your boot, and you're trying to get your gun out to defend yourself, because this crazy lady's wearing a 12-inch butcher knife around trying to stab you all the time. I just come home to rest. I finally get things calmed down, and you know, lay down, and I wake up quick. When I wake up quick, I don't know about people that lay there and think about it. I wake up quick. Speak to you, wake up quick. And I always had an impurity thought, and I needed something to get my heart started. I'd go out in the kitchen, put about 100 mini bennies in a blender, and a little orange juice, couple of raw eggs, and pour myself a big glass of vodka, and hit it a couple of times with some Tabasco, so I could call it a bloody mare, and drink that, and chase it away. I always had an impurity thought. I like to mow my front yard at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning because I didn't have a front yard, I had front dirt. I like to mow front dirt. Front dirt's more fun than front yard. You don't need a grass catcher if you mow front dirt. And I'd get on the garage, find my lawnmower, and about that time all that stuff would go off 2 inches behind my belly button, and I'd be making this. I couldn't find a rope, you can push start your lawnmower there, and then I'd get on the front yard and try to mow my front yard. I don't know, I didn't have a very good maintenance program back then, and one morning my mower died about 5 o'clock in the morning, and it must have been something that I brought from Texas. I don't know if it don't run killer, and I shot a hole in my lawnmower with a 44 mag at 5 o'clock in the morning. I know that isn't too cool after I came to AA. Some of my friends who had all the Marine training to be, you know, trained killers. I was always kind of envious. I had to kind of train myself, start out with lawnmowers, you know. And, it was an experience. You watch the bird go right through the thing. And then the cops come and they want to talk to you about what you're doing out in the front yard. And then the conversation gets a little weird. And then they want to run my head into a nightstick 5 or 6 times. And then my wife comes out and wants to talk to them about not taking me away because I've got all these things to do. And, you know, and then she goes nuts on them. And then they put the handcuffs on her. And I think, well, you got it right now. But she's the crazy one. You know. And then some cop will say something about my wife, and I got to punch him because you can't talk about him. I'm the only one that can talk about my wife like that. And then they hit me over the head and take the handcuffs off of her and put them on me. And then I go down to the jail, and she comes down, got a hot shirt, and get me out. And by the way, it was when I was a social drinker. I didn't know about you. I ended up going to jail and not words a lot so they could discuss my attitude and what was happening in my life. I didn't understand it. I didn't know what was going on. Ultimately, I ended up standing in front of the judge one more time, and he's talking to me about me, and he's got the right guy, and he's talking to me about violating my parole, and for some, I didn't even remember. And he's talking to me about going to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous, never even heard of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I knew something about jail. I did not want to go to jail, I didn't have much of a choice then. I said, I'll go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And my parole officer let me go home. They assigned me to this meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they gave me a person to call. And I called this guy up. And he came over and talked to me about Alcoholics Anonymous. And he was old. And he just looked like, he was living death. And I just, thought I was going to have to tell the Berkeley neighbors that he's my granddaddy or something. And then they were cool. They were taking LSD, laying in the front yard watching the sun come up and go down. I couldn't let this old guy from my head blow my image. Then I told my wife I got to go to my college anonymous meeting, and it started at 8:30 that night, and it was over at 10. And I laid down to think about it. And about 8 o'clock, she came over and stuck this butcher knife in my face and told me to get up. Where are we going? She said, we're going to that AA meeting. And because she'd been to a lawyer a number of times, and he told her this lawyer finally told her I was probably an alcoholic. And, I got up, and the cops had taken my guns away, so, she had the knife. I went over to this church, and there she drove me over there in this car, and there was a big AA sign out in front of the church, and I said, if my friends see me doing, it's really going to blow my image, And she said, what time's the meeting start? And I said, it starts at 8:30 and it's over at 10. And she said, I'm going to tell you something, Ace. If your ass comes out of that door for a 10, I'm going to gut you. Now, you can keep a drunk like me in that church house if you got a crazy woman circling the perimeter out there. I didn't see it. But I won't learn nothing. I won't learn nothing because I'm not an alcoholic. I'm just there to get the heat off. And amazing thing, they talked about sponsors, they talked about the steps, they talked about going to a lot of meetings. I never heard nothing. I
When the Bona Fide World was saying, and the,
well, there was one thing I heard while I was in the high school clean and sober for 4 months. Now she wrote it in the parking lot. I really heard nothing except one thing. I remember that later when I started drinking. There was some old fool in there that looked me down the eye one night and he said, "We will not guarantee you have your last drink,
but we will guarantee you'll never enjoy another one."
God, I remember that when I started drinking again. I mean, it just come right back to me. Eventually, I got drunk and a lot of things happened to me in the next 4 years that I was drinking and doing my thing. I went back to Alcoholics Anonymous a few times, but and I didn't know for anything but just to get the heat up, and the next 4 years of my drinking was just unbelievable. I'm a violent drunk, physically violent. I know a bit of that comes from fear, and I really won't debate the fact that somebody verbally abused people. There's no damage in physical abuse, but I will let you know that I was talking to you when I was beating the hell out of you too, so there is hope for those people who are verbal that can become physical and vice versa. But the thing that I remember the most is in the next 4 years of my bed, I remember standing in my kitchen and looking down the hallway, and a little 9-year-old girl standing down the end of that hallway, and she had a chin on her chest and the hair was in her face, and she stand down at the end of that hallway like a wild animal, and she lived in the room down on the other end of that house, and there was an umbrella of fear over that house that was beyond hate. And I'd stand there and take a drink out of that jug and look at her, and she didn't run down that hallway and get me around the leg and say, "Daddy, please come and play with me today." She didn't say anything like that at all. She just looked at me, and I turned around and took another drink out of that jug, and without a sound, she'd be gone, because all she really wanted to know was which direction I was going, so she'd go the other way. And I lived like that not one day, not one month, but for 4 years, and the insanity of that, it wouldn't work. I couldn't even get a fraction of the thought of what it was. And I reached for everything that I could reach for in order to try to get the, no matter how physically drunk I got, I knew I was just what I thought I was. And ultimately I ended up in a motel room up in Taft, California, hiding out. And I don't know if any of you ever been to Taft, California. It's not a real social place to drink, but it's a good place to hide out. And I was hiding out up there in a motel room, and I couldn't stand me anymore. I had to call out there was a couple of different groups of people who had contracts on my life. I found out later one cheapskate had a slingshot and a BB, but, you know, kind of impressed me. Whenever you're paranoid, it gives you something to think about. And I finally crawled out of there, and I came back home one more time, there's a little gray-headed man that believed in Alcoholics Anonymous, believed in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and believed in 12-step calls, and a series of events, and some people that believed in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I suppose a little effort on my own, because the seed had been planted. So a gray-headed man came to my house, and he did a 12-step call on me, and I can't tell you that I met him with open arms and said, I'm just excited to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because it was the only place I had to go. It was the last house on the block. It was the last place for me to go. I'd run out of friends and enemies at the same time because, you see, I'm the kind of an alcoholic as long as there's one man, woman, child, dog, or cat that are better. When I snap my fingers, I won't look at me. I will not look at me. I won't do anything about me. I'll just blow over you. And I'd run it all out, and a little gray-headed man came to my house and he talked to me about the loneliness, and he talked to me about the fact that there's a possibility that I could live the rest of my life one day at a time without drinking or using anything, that I could live a sober life. And I didn't understand all those things, but it was the only thing I had going that I thought of. And he took me to a detox, and they put me in this detox, and stayed in there. And people from Alcoholics Anonymous came to this detox, and it wasn't as fancy as some of them today. It was mostly just people from Alcoholics Anonymous coming there and talking to you about Alcoholics Anonymous. And I could remember a few things about Alcoholics Anonymous. I really didn't understand anything about what they were saying, but it seemed to me that there were certain things that they said I was going to have to do that I was willing to do. And I didn't really understand. I was really with fear. I took 3 steps down the hall and crying 3 steps down the hall of life. I was just insane because I just didn't physically say that and just become one of them. I just felt fear. I just felt anger. I didn't understand these feelings that I was having. And then I felt a little secure there. They talked to me about things like how long I drank, and I said,
"Well, my 22 years. They said, "Well, you know, you'll have to go to a meeting every day for at least 22 years. Well, before you can have a night out and go to a movie, you know." And the telling thing I was telling the guy, crazy Ryan, was going to have to work the steps. He's going to have to get a sponsor, and they assigned me a sponsor, and they gave me a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they sent me home. And I got home and knocked on the front door, and this crazy lady came to the front door, and I said, "I got to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous every day and day for the rest of my life. What are you going to do, bitch?" You know what I mean? She gave me a spiritual once we say that. She just looked at me real, "Well, I've been going to Alanine, the kids been going to Alatine, the dogs been going to Aladar, and the cats been going to Alatar. What are you going to do?" You know, I didn't know what to do. I ran and called my sponsor, and he said, "Don't do anything, I'll come and get you." And Cam got me, and he started taking me to believe about Alcoholics Anonymous. I was just crazy. I was just crazy all the time. I owed a lot of money, a lot of money. And I owed it to people. If you don't call them up and say, "I'll send you a dollar a week," man, I mean, I was a heat on. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know. I had so many guns on me that if you'd have bumped into me, it would have been a mushroom cloud. I didn't know what to do. I'd sit at a stoplight and I'd tell my spouse, "Talk to me about God." And he said, "Well, you see that guy standing on the corner over there?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, do you want to kill him?" I said, "No, I don't even know him." He said, "Well, do you want to kill him?" And I said, "No." He said, "Well, that's spiritual for you. For a guy that made an enemy every day, that's spiritual." Okay, you know. Well, I didn't understand it. You know, I went to a meeting. I went to a man around. I went to a men's club. I went there because they taught my lady tongue profanity. My friend Bert came in to go there, and he used to say, "Let's go to the sickest meeting in the world." But I felt good in there. I could sit there and there. People would talk about weird, sick, sick stuff. I mean, sick. And I'd judge them, and I'd take a gun out of my boot, take a bullet out of the gun, write their name while they're sharing on the bed, and hold on, say, "I'm going to kill you right after the meeting. You deserve to die." But if I do that 2 or 3 times, and people would just smile and talk sick stuff, they wouldn't pay attention to me. After the meeting, they'd stand up and hug you and say, "We love you, keep coming back." And I'd go, "I'm coming back next week." They have grenade in here and kill you all. You know, and I just... I had to go to work. I was trying to run a deal. I had to go out in Wyoming trying to work in the oil business, and I didn't know what to do with that. Try to run a deal. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous to do all the deals. I came here and set it up, and it was me. All the character defects I had, I brought with me right here, and I owed all this money. It was just insane all the time. I was trying to shuck and drive. I didn't know anything else. I mean, all my good ideas that I brought into Alcoholics Anonymous with me was kind of like taking shock treatments. I was a little apprehensive, but the adrenaline flow was okay, and then the rest was great, and then he was kind of childlike afterwards. I mean, that's a tribe, you know. I mean, I'd done it, and I was up in Wyoming trying to run a deal, and I came home. By then, I'm a year and a half physically sober. I've done an immoral inventory, a fearful inventory. I had to make amends to a herd of sheep, and you know, I'm doing the best I can with what I got, and I come home, and I run up to the front door, and my wife comes to my door. I said, "Get in the bedroom, I'm morning. I've saved myself for you." She said, "No, I've been going to Alanine, and I've worked the steps. I have a sponsor now, and I've discovered that you haven't made love to me in the last 10 years. You rape me on a regular basis." "Well, what the hell do you have a spiritual God? I'm a year and a half sober. I've saved myself." She said, "You're sleeping on the couch." And I went over and laid down on the couch and started pouting. And by midnight, all the Dolphins lived next door. Just had to know their backyard, I guess. I don't know. She come running down the hallway, running in, said, "The Dolphins next door are all mowing the backyard. I can't see it." I jumped up off the couch, got my 34 mag, ran out the back door, and into the fence, and Dave got hit me down there all the hell. She got over and threw her arms around and said, "Oh, buddy, I just love you. When you're a hero, I'm taking me no charge one on me." I mean, I don't understand. A couple of days later, the Whippers moved out. I was single-handedly cleaning up a neighborhood that had been corrupt for years. And I know that sounds crazy, but that's the way I was. I didn't know what to do. 3 years later, I'm dying inside. They told me to get active in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm doing the best that I'm going to need, and all the time I'm cleaning up, you know, just crazy. And, you know, you stay sober 3 years, prosperity sets in, I'm paying a few things back, and doing pretty good. I've got this, you know, I tried to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I hadn't had a haircut in a number of years, I hadn't shaved in a long time, at least I trimmed my beard, got my hair. But then I went down to see him in October and got me one of them
suits, irreversible vests, irreversible jacket, irreversible tie, irreversible hanky, irreversible shorts, you know. And I went down, got me a big Mark IV Lincoln, you know, with a long beard, and put my suit on, went down to the Alano Club on Saturday morning and stood over in my corner and got my Lincoln out front, you know, so the newcomers had had hope. And my sponsor sat on the other side of the room, pointed at me and said, "Hey, you want to put 3 years without a change of attitude?" You know? I was standing around that club on Saturday morning, just crazy as a loon. I didn't know what to do, and I looked around. The weirdo was standing next to me. The weirdest looking guy you ever saw. Hair sticking over there, and you know, he wasn't tall enough to be a man. He wasn't sure enough to be a midget. Just weird. And I asked him, "What do you want?" And he said, "Will you be my sponsor?" He said, "Oh, Christ, man." But I mean, I'm sure you should have a judge or somebody asking me, you know. So I don't know, I had to ask my sponsor, and I went over to my sponsor, and I said, "That weirdo over there asked me to be his sponsor. Can you believe that crap?" And he said, "Yeah, I sent him over, you know." I hate to smother my sponsor, and I went back to that weirdo, and I told him, and I said, "No, my sponsor says I've got to be your sponsor. What do you want to do?" He said, "I want to go for a ride with Lincoln, you know what I mean?" I got in my lane and he started going to me and he's talking sick stuff to me, sick stuff. And then he down in the middle of it, he said, "You ever do anything like that?" And I said, "Yeah, I did some stuff like that." And he said, "Well, tell me." I started telling my stuff and he said, "You're sick. You're sick. You need to go to me." And I said, "Okay, go to me." And I walked in the middle of this weirdo and he put, "That's my sponsor." I said, "Don't tell people I'm your sponsor." My friend who standing over there and watched me come in and says, "Boy, it's going to be fun to watch you two grow." I didn't know what the hell it was crazy and I took him to meet spiritual giants and all kinds of things. He went and got a Bible and started reading the Bible. What else is about the Bible? I don't know nothing about the Bible. The only thing I know about God is what they told me in the very beginning. There is God and there is Him. He asked me about, you know, the burning bush, or the parting of the waters. I didn't know what. I thought, sitting on my Lincoln after a meeting one night, I think that's some lighter fluid I could push the hedge or something. I don't know. I thought, well, I got a 45 in the glove box. I took it out, jacked it back, stuck it up against his head, and pushed real hard, and I said, "I'm going to count to 10. If this gun doesn't go off, believe in God." Come on. I didn't. I put it back there. He jumped out of my car, went crazy, running around on the parking lot. Run back in the club and called my sponsor, showed him that ring on his head, and said, "You stuck a gun in my head." And the sponsor told him, "Yeah, it is stupid." And I mean, I know that's crazy. I don't know. We're both still sober, man. I mean, it's, I don't know what to do. I was crazy. People wanted to come and sit next to me in a meeting. I just radiated so much hate. And I don't know what it was. I was sitting at home on Sunday morning reading a spiritual book, you know, something that somebody had talked to me about. I didn't understand it, but I was trying to read it. It didn't make sense. And I was trying to look like I was spiritual. And coming back to the front door, and I went to the front door, and there was that weirdo man in my front door. It was crazy. I was in a car park in my driveway, and stickers all over it. My neighbor's going to know everything now, and he had, like, half of him was stuck in the concrete, and the other half of him was going to tear it on. And he had a big book with paper stuck in it, and it was just crazy. And I asked him what he wanted, and he said he wanted to lift the steps like I did. And I'm trying to, I got him to know. I said, "The first step says I'm powerless, and my life's unmanageable. I know that's a fact, because you're in my house, and it looks like you're going to stay." You know? And the second step says, "Come to believe that something can restore you to sanity. I know you're crazy and I understand you, so we must be on step 3. And I told him I had to get on my knees and do that third step prayer when we're a human being. And he got on his knees right there in my kitchen. He said, "Get down here." And I got on there on my knees and we read the third step prayer together. And he cuddled up next to me. And, oh, man. So man, if my wife sees me down here on my knees, she's going to know I've wiped out for sure. You know, and the cat walked by and looked weird at me. You know? Then he jumped up and said he wanted to do his first step right there. I said, "You got to have that done when you get to your sponsor's house." And he said, "No, I can't write." And he threw some paper and a pencil in front of me. And he said, "I'll talk to you, right?" And he started talking and I started writing. And I'm writing away, you know. And then he said, "That stupid thing." And then he said, "You ever do anything like that?" And I said, "Yeah, I did some stuff like that." And he started telling me even more. And I said, "Yeah, I did some of that." And then I got to remembering that there was a couple of things I forgot to tell my sponsor whenever I did my first step. I knew he had invited God into the room and he started telling me, "I just put some of my prayer in here. What the hell, you know?" He heard it, you know, and it was just, I felt good. And he jumped up and kissed me and took off. And I'd say, yeah, yeah, real good, Sunday afternoon, sometimes I'm nervous, I said, I love you. And well, follow me now, the verse says, follow him. And I don't understand these feelings. But I know some today. I know that, you know, I'm grateful for the time as a sponsor because they knew I was dying. I was physically dying. Why? In Alcoholics Anonymous, 3 years, 3.5 years sober, and they knew if I didn't get out of myself, I was going to die, I wasn't going to stay sober, I was going to go absolutely insane, and no matter what they told me, they had to show me, they had to help me, and I know that day when that guy left my hands, I knew that for some period of hours there, I had not thought about me, and I hadn't thought any less of him for what he shared with me and what he said, and I let him go and known those things about me. There was no secrets there that day. I let him walk out of my life, and I didn't have that fear, And I'd like to tell you that a day's been a holiday and one more's been a banquet from that day to this, and that's not been the way it is. I mean, I've had to change. I've had to change to stay here. I'm afraid of change. God, I don't want to change. I don't know who I am. I know when I was about 3.5 years sober, one Saturday morning I was going to go to a meeting, and I left the house, my wife was on the phone talking to an 911. And I went and put on a 3-piece suit, went out and got my big car, drove the block down the street, turned around, came back, went in the house, said hi to her, walked in, took off my suit, put on my cowboy hat, my boots, and walked out, and jeans, and vest, walked out, got my pickup, said bye to my wife, walked out, got my pickup, drove 2 blocks down the street, turned around, came back, went in, took off my boots, my vest, my jeans, went in and put on my layers, went out, got on my hair, went 2 blocks down the street, and it's not it, come back home, and my wife was talking to this lady on the phone, and the lady asked me, said, how many people live there? Well, just one. The alcoholic done that earlier yesterday. He just went on. I didn't know who I was. I didn't know what, I mean, I'm trying to pay this money back to all these people, and I'm trying to stay sober. I'm trying to, you know, figure out what's going on in my life, and, I was paying these people back the best way I knew now, and I told my sponsor, I'll pay them back, you know, I'll pay these people back, but don't tell me how to get the money, you know, and what I was doing was compromising, and I was selling my soul just a little bit of a turn, and I had those old ideas, but I never shut the back doors, and I was still doing a lot of things in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was active in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've always been active in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've always had strong sponsorship, and I'm here to stay around here and do things that have been asked me to do, and I'm very grateful for that. And 9 years sober, 9 years sober, I woke up one morning, and I'd like to tell you that the 9 years sober, I woke up this morning and decided that I'm going to change my life. That's not what happened at all. I woke up one morning and my life changed, because you see, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I asked you for help. Help me stay sober. Help me stay physically sober, and you did. You told me, you know, come do a verse, and you did, and I turned that part over to you, but I didn't turn the rest of my life over to you. But I'll run my life, I'll do my life, I'll do these things. Don't tell me how to do that. Just help me stay physically sober. And I'm grateful for physical sobriety. Physical sobriety is the most important thing there is for me, but I've had to change. 9 years sober, I'm standing in front of a judge one more time. He's talking to me about me, and he's got the right guy, and he's talking to me about over 20 years in battling with organized crime. What that did, that destroyed all the trust that I've built in 9 years sobriety. I've asked that lady in that house that we've been together over 20 years, and I love her very much. She's going to 4 or 5 out-of-mind meetings a day, or a week, and, you know, every meeting that we've listened to other alcoholics, and my little girl growing up and gone to Alakin, and good things were happening. But you see, it's one thing to tell a lie, but it's another thing to live a lie. You can't live a lie and stay sober. You can't. You got to change. You can't stay here and not change, and I'm afraid of change. You see, I don't know anything about what I'm supposed to be. And I'm trying to just stay sober. I'm doing the best I can. By the time I'm 9 years sober, I've been the chairman of the Southern California Convention, the largest family convention in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been a big deal. I can take you to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous where I sponsor a lot of people, 30, 50 people in that meeting, and I'll tell you that I've saved their lives. They're better. Because I've done it all. I've been a big deal around here. I've been in service. I've done all these things. You see, but at 9 years sober, it didn't make any difference. That judge did not want my AA resume. What he wanted to know is about me. You see, up until including that time, I was not free. I was just loose. And I had to sit through that deal, and I had to walk it out, because the other time it took me by the hand, a strong sponsorship, and the people in Alcoholics Anonymous who've been through those things took me by the hand, they literally walked me through it, and I'm grateful for the old timers around here who believe that 9 years of sobriety is just as important as saving as 9 days. and they walk me through these things by holding my hand and telling me, we've been through these things. We've been through these things and we've been able to do it and stay safe and walk with a little dignity. And had to walk through those things. I had to go make some amends. I had to stand in front of people and say I'm wrong. You see, I never wanted to say I'm wrong. I don't want to say I'm wrong. If I say I'm wrong, I've got to change, and I don't want to change. I've got to run around here with that attitude. I've got to run around here and say, let me do my deal. Let me be a big-time deal around here. I'm grateful for people like Clancy and Johnny, my sponsor Johnny, stood beside me, and they had the faith, and they shared with me. They told me, you know, you just stay here. It's time to close the back doors. It's time to change. You gotta quit running around here shoving this thing up everybody. You gotta come around here and be an alcoholic. That's all you really are, just an alcoholic. And I'm grateful because there's a loving God that gave me some time before I had to make these changes. That allowed me to just come here and be a part of you, and I had a commitment here, and my friend Chuck B has always allowed me to work and be a part of the commitment. The actions that I've had to take has just allowed me to show up so that I can find out about myself and accept about myself and accept that I'm willing to change. I had to stand in front of people and say, you know, my wrongs are that I'm not going to do it anymore, and I've had to go get a job and punch in and punch out, and I've had to, you know, try to learn something about loyalty and about friendship and about love. You know, try to be an unselfish lover to my wife and be a father to my daughter. And there are the people around here giving me the strength to do that. They give me the strength to do that so that I can come here and I can stand here and I can stand in front of you and I know beyond the shadow of a doubt that I'm free. The reason I know that is because from the very second I woke up this morning to this second right now, baby, I've seen them all. I've been downtown with them. I've seen them all. I've seen the tall ones, the short ones, and the rich ones, and the poor ones. An amazing thing about me today, because of you, I haven't seen one person or thought of nobody I'd rather be than me. See, that's freedom. You gave me that. Gave me the dignity to walk in here and just be a human being, just be an alcoholic, and accept my fears, and to know beyond a shadow of a doubt that I'm right on track. Right on track. The people that held on to me, that kept me from veering off in those other directions, saved my life. People in the rooms like this, you allowed me to come here and be a part of you. And for that, I'm very grateful. Thank you.